Hey, welcome to Highly Questionable. On one side, we got Media Combs. On the other, we got Mike Golick Jr. Let's talk about some sports or something.
Should teams be terrified to see Steph Curry in the playoffs?
All right, so the Warriors beat the brakes off the Pelicans last night. ESPN went to full Marvel on it, too. And Steph was out there all some superhero. I don't know what that means. The Pelicans were. They look like dead birds. Anyway, after the game, Draymond Green said that teams are, quote, terrified of the prospect of seeing Steph Curry in the playoffs. And that sounds 100% true. He has been incredible this year in general, the second half in particular. And then the last month has just been something unlike anything we've ever seen before. Here's the thing about it, though. They're terrified to see Steph. Ain't nobody even looking at the rest of the dudes on this team, man. Like if this were a one-on-one tournament, hey, man, Steph is absolutely the guy that we are going to. The only people that's terrified of the rest of the Warriors are the fans of the Warriors. Like, I don't know how far that one man could take them. But, like, if Steph were hypothetically to take the Warriors to the finals, I'm not saying they're going to. Let's just say that happened. That would be almost twice as impressive as what LeBron did in 2007 with that set of dudes, because that team had more talent around LeBron than this team has around Steph Curry. And I don't mean to insult you guys, but I got to be honest. Talk about the rest of the Warriors. I don't know what else to say about you.
No, you're absolutely right. And I'm tired of the whiplash with this squad, because every time Steph goes off, and it happens a lot these days, we do this. Oh, everybody's scared of the Warriors. They're the team no one wants to play. When just a few days ago, after they got destroyed by the Mavs and then beaten by the lowly Timberwolves, who are equipped to take advantage of the Warriors' lack of size, we do the other conversation, which is, oh, the Warriors are in trouble. They're not scary. They're scary in a play-in, because in one game, Steph Curry can beat you. But in a series, nobody's afraid of this team.
This seems almost explicitly a product of what the circumstances around the NBA have been this year. We've had so few opportunities where stars have been on the court for us in any amount of consistent length of time that when we've got one in Steph who has performed this well, historic numbers over the last month or so, we latch onto it and try and make it more than it has to be here. Like Bomani pointed out, until you start doing trial by combat in the NBA, I'm not going to worry about Steph Curry being the one thing. It'll be great for the play-in tournament that we heard from Draymond Green that they don't already care about. But beyond that, I don't know why we're all of a sudden going to start to believe in the old idea that one player can be enough to lift the team through a postseason that just requires more than that now.
Not to take this too literally, but if it was actually trial by combat, I would bet against Steph, to be clear. He would be probably last in my rankings.
That game last night would have gone a lot different.
I tell you this, though, in line with combat, though, let's talk about what basketball was, though, because one thing that you point out, and this is the truth, the impact of one individual on team success used to be a lot greater before all the rules changes and the evolution of the game, right? Like the idea of what you can do just because you have that one guy. Part of what the fun of watching Steph is, for those of us who came up watching isolation basketball, I understand why it had to change, but there's something to be said about it's me and it's you and let's go make this happen. Steph is doing that against everybody right now in a way that I don't remember anyone doing, which is doubly amazing when you consider that he's doing it at that size. At 6'3", you're not supposed to be able to be the guy that could do that. But it is fun to watch somebody just say, all right, put somebody up against me and I'm going to take them, and then keep taking them over and over and over again.
Okay, now do you all owe Russell Westbrook an apology?
Hey, man, I can't speak for everybody. I have always found Russell Westbrook to be delightful, but he put up 14, 24, and 21 last night. Poor Sabonis, who had 32, 19, and 9, and nobody even cares, because we are in one of those times where we are giving Russell Westbrook his flowers. What's wild about this to me, though, he's putting up like numbers that he's been putting up basically for the last 5 years. This isn't terribly different from what we've seen him do in previous years. The advanced numbers, though, don't tend to be as favorable to him as we are at seeing the raw counting stats. I'm not sure exactly how impactful his play in that way is to winning. But the thing that I think he gets a lot, should get a lot of credit for this year and doesn't, which is, this is at a point in his career where most guys are saying to themselves, I'll do whatever it takes for you to put me on a winner or just chasing rings. He's taking a Papa Bear role with this squad, a squad that he knew when he got there wasn't going to be any good. He knew they weren't going to wind up making the playoffs, and he's every bit as invested in this team as he was in the ones that were trying to win a championship, and that's where I salute him.
This does have a lot of reminiscence of Chris Paul's time in Oklahoma City, where we didn't even think he was going to play for that team, and all of a sudden, goes out and accomplishes in a similar way. And that's always been Russ's MO. Like, he has been consistently this. He's the macro version of that conversation we just had about Steph, where it's always felt like Russ is holding down Turbo and it's him against the world. And it's incredibly compelling. From the free throw line to free throw line, there is no more fun player to watch in basketball. No one who attacks the rim like it did something to his parents, like Russell Westbrook. The problem is, it's just always got an expiration date. Like, we get to this certain point where the attitudes that make him great and fun to watch also make him really difficult for winning basketball. I will never be able to get those fourth quarters in Oklahoma City with him and Kevin Durant out of my head, where you have Russell Westbrook, because of all this that we love, taking the ball away consistently in key moments from the guy who should have been shooting all along. So this is all great. I feel like we've always appreciated the fun of Russell Westbrook, but we also know what it is and what it's not.
Yeah, those are legitimate criticisms of Russell Westbrook. And really, to me, the question is, what are we apologizing for? If you said he was washed before the season, then yes, you do owe him an apology, because clearly his athleticism, which was what we all expected to decline, it's the driving force behind his game, it's still there. The numbers he's putting up are insane. The playmaking is incredible. And if you're Washington, you're happy with the trade, which wasn't something, by the way, that was guaranteed back when it happened. But he's still the same guy he's always been, for better or for worse. And Bomani, you don't even have to get that advanced. Like, his shooting efficiency is still just okay. He still leads the league in turnovers. Those are problems that have plagued him his entire career. It doesn't take away from the fact that he's one of the 50 best NBA players of all time, and he's exciting to watch, but it doesn't mean that he's above reproach, or that Scott Brooks said that he's the second best point guard of all time. Like, he is not better than Steph Curry. He talked about at the top of the show. Everyone knows that.
All right, I do want to say something, though, for Golic. Let's be careful. What we're talking about now with Westbrook is year 13, and there actually have been signs of decline in the athleticism. He doesn't get to the free throw line like he used to, and he doesn't make free throws the way that he used to. But a big part of why you saw him taking those shots instead of Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City was Kevin Durant over there getting mauled in the corner and couldn't do anything about it, and Scott Brooks not being able to come up with a way to get anybody any shots. So what you wind up with? Russell Westbrook having to do it by himself. And he's taking those bullets for a lot of people over the course of his career. While at those points, he was a lot better than people wanted to give him credit for, because he never said a word about the fact that he was taking these bullets for everybody else. We can't blame him every time that the Thunder lost. And that's what people have done. And that's why the producer asked us if we owe him an apology. You got to go talk to those haters. I've been enjoying the show.
What does it tell you that the Vikings wanted Justin Fields?
All right, Courtney Cronin of ESPN, she covers the Vikings, and she says that the Vikings were sitting there at 14 waiting for Justin Fields to fall into their laps. But then in the third round, when Kellen Mond was there, they decided to take him, and the idea is that he is the Kirk Cousins succession plan. And what do I take this to mean? Wow, somebody with the Vikings appear to have some good sense. Like, I don't think that Kellen Mond is going to wind up being the future, but good enough is not a reason to not look for better. That's the real lesson from what Kansas City did with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, we can get to the AFC Championship with this guy, but we're probably going to need to get better. And so they went and rolled the dice on better. What I don't understand in this context, though, is if the Vikings really wanted better, why'd you sit there and wait at 14? If you want a quarterback, you're going to need to make a move in order to go up and get him. Instead, your division rival went ahead and pulled it off. But Kirk Cousins played pretty well last year. But Kirk Cousins is also 32 years old. And none of us, even the most optimistic Kirk Cousins fans, would not say that they think that's a guy that has a high ceiling. Justin Fields does. Why not give that a go, bring him in, and then wait a year and see what you got?
Bo is absolutely right about this. Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. He's been one of the better quarterbacks in football over the last few years, but he's not a great quarterback. He's not great in big moments. He is not great enough to elevate a mediocre roster like Minnesota had last year. And that's a problem for the team going forward, because while last season Kirk had a relatively low cap hit, actually lower than Jacoby Brissett, I just checked, going forward over the next 2 years, it shoots up to the top three in the NFL. And then after that, they can't franchise him because of all the shenanigans that happened in Washington, all of which means this is about leverage. It's not about Justin Fields, because as you said, Bo, if the Vikings actually wanted Justin Fields, they would have gone up and gotten Justin Fields, which frankly, maybe is something they should have considered. But that's not what this is about. This is about having a plan B after Cousins, which they don't have, which means he has power over them.
And that's always been the Kirk Cousins story. It's never been, usually in the NFL, you're paying for either an otherworldly ability, one or many, or consistently. Kirk has provided you the latter, and he's managed to get himself in situations and weather them and give himself a tremendous amount of leverage. But this sends a very clear message, and one I'm interested to see how Kirk Cousins responds to, because he came into the league as this guy. He came into the league as Kellen Mond, and like, that third and fourth round range is still in the spot where when I see buddies of mine that are still playing in the league have a draft pick that comes in that range, I'm usually texting them to see if everything's all right and checking in, because that's always an indication that you're not safe. We've started to think about the exit strategy for this situation, and you can't blame them, because the big moments Mina's talking about are, listen, we had Case Keenum. We thought things went pretty well. We expected you to be the difference, and you haven't been. You can blame some of that on extraordinary circumstances we've seen Minnesota losing, but the rest is just that you have a quarterback who, since he came to Minnesota, has been something like eighth in total QBR, and that's just not going to be good enough to say, hey, consistently see is great for this long-term plan of ours.
Hold on, though. Can we throw this up here? Old salty Robert Griffin was right!
Yes, I was going to call that up!
Yeah, I can tell you right now, number 8 in Minnesota is probably not real happy right now, because Kellen Mond represents exactly what he doesn't do well, right? Kellen Mond's the big physical quarterback. He can run it, throw it all over the field. And I don't think that that's something that number 8 is able to do in Cousins in Minnesota. But I think that's what the coaching staff and the administration is looking for. Should I say the organization is looking for. And as you see, you know, Cousins has been collecting checks there in Minnesota for a long time, taking them to 8-8 and 9-7 seasons. If he has a bad start to the year like he did last year, I could see the fans and maybe the organization leaning towards Mond if he comes in and impresses.
The thing about what he said is, like, in some ways it's shade. He's cashing checks. But in other ways, it is incredible praise. Like, we all have to give Kirk Cousins credit for how he handled his business. What he did in Washington is why he is now in this position in Minnesota. And it's something that no other quarterback has done, right? Like, the fact that he pushed it to the limit, played through the tags, got that guaranteed money, and now is in a position again where he has leverage is kind of incredible.
Yeah, you can call it praise. That isn't what Robert Griffin was calling it when he was saying it. That was not he was not speaking from the JP Morgan perspective.
Up next on HQ.
DK is, as you said, he's fast for his size. That's why he's so amazing at football. But he didn't even run like the fastest 40 of the receivers in his class. There's a dude in this draft, Anthony Schwartz, who went to the Browns, who set, I believe, a world record for the 100 for use back when he used to run track and field. DK Metcalf didn't even run track and field in college. And I'm saying this totally from an objective place and not because I want DK Metcalf wrapped in bubble wrap until the NFL season. This is purely my objective opinion. He should stick to football.
Do you question if DK Metcalf is better at sprinting than he is at football?
All right, so fun fact. DK Metcalf had a slower time in the three-cone drill than Tom Brady did, but they don't have a three-cone drill at the Olympics, and he's trying to make it in the 100 meters, started training after the season was over. You may remember him from this play against Budapest. There we go. We normally put the arrow on, but no need. Got him.
That should be Budapest. Like, and just hearing those footsteps of that menacing coming feet. By me.
Those are heavy feet. Here's the one thing about it. I don't know what he's gotten his 100-meter time up to, but he's about to find out just how fast the real fast people are. Like, DK Metcalf is really fast for football and really fast for his size. Those dudes are really fast for really fast.
DK is, as you said, he's fast for his size. That's why he's so amazing at football. But he didn't even run like the fastest 40 of the receivers in his class. There's a dude in this draft, Anthony Schwartz, who went to the Browns, who set, I believe, a world record for the 100 for use back when he used to run track and field. DK Metcalf didn't even run track and field in college. And I'm saying this totally from an objective place and not because I want DK Metcalf wrapped in bubble wrap until the NFL season. This is purely my objective opinion. He should stick to football.
I was just wondering if we were going to get to that point where we say, should the Seahawks be worried about DK Metcalf out here using his offseason time to potentially pull a hamstring? And I hope we can be above all of that, because I want to see the really big, fast guy get humbled so he can have just a little taste of what it's like to be the rest of us watching him.
Do you question which Shohei Ohtani at bat was more impressive?
All right, I remember that time that Mina thought that Shohei Ohtani was going to play for the Mariners and screamed on television like that painting about it, but it didn't happen. Anyway, he's been doing like Babe Ruth stuff. He's leading the league in homers and has a 3.29 ERA. Babe Ruth would have had a lower ERA, but let's see what we got here at these at-bats. I love you too, Mina.
It wasn't actually on television. It was in between tapings.
Okay, got you. Oh, I didn't.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Dude, this is insane. Yeah,
look at
watch this again.
The strides.
When he comes out of frame, ooh, you think it's over, and then all of a sudden, he's just there at second base.
Wow. Now we got another thing to watch? Oh, okay.
Oh, God.
Oh, goodness. Ooh. Yo, that's like Bo Jackson in the All-Star game type situation in that stadium. Wow. Are they any good this year, by the way? Because I'm just accustomed to the Angels like having incredible individual athletic feats and then winning 79 games.
You know who's ahead of them in the standings?
Really?
The Seattle Mariners. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. When's the last time they had a winning season?
It's been a minute, Bo. It's been a minute. And the painting was The Scream by Edward Munch. And it's not really what I did. I kind of like leaned back and went, no! That would be more like, no!
Oh, okay.
Thank you for recreating both of those. Internet, go ahead and do your thing.
Tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern, Mavericks and Heat.
All right, the Heat are trying to get out of this play-in bracket, but there's a good chance they'll be there because their remaining schedule is pretty tough. Here's Jimmy Butler talking about that slate.
Are you aware of sort of how tough the schedule is down the close with two against Boston, one against Philly, one against Milwaukee, I mean, and one against Dallas? I mean, does it almost feel maybe a little bit like pre-playoffs?
That's tough for you?
I don't know. I'm just saying. There's challenges.
Maybe if your star was on our team, it'd be tough. I think we'll be just fine.
My sorry thanks you. Thanks, Jimmy.
What's the learning curve of being Jimmy Butler's friend when you realize that he does that kind of thing to people he likes, right? That's got to take a little while to figure out. Mina, are you intrigued?
Yeah, I'm intrigued and also impressed by the reporter there, because you're right. I think they have a pre-existing relationship clearly based on that exchange. But if that happened to me, I would not have that kind of quick comeback. I would just be frozen, like very,
Even though it would be really bad for an NBA team to have any of us on the roster. Golic, you intrigued?
Very intrigued. You always hear about leaders treating the first guy and the last guy on the roster on the same. I'm glad we're starting to extend that to the media now. Feels right at home.
Tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Nets and Bucks.
All right, when they played on Sunday, it was incredible. So now they're going to run this back. We're going to show you a clip of Giannis Antetokounmpo doing something that many of us honestly didn't think was possible. We can't remember having seen.
Yeah.
He blocked Kevin Durant's, and not like a fingertip. He blocked it. Woo, boy. Hey, man, once again, this is the team the Nets probably need to look out for, because you need a whole team to play defense against Giannis, and that whole team don't play defense. Mina, you intrigued?
Look, I'm not saying the network is biased against the Nets or the producers of Highly Questionable, but I would like to point out, as someone who watched this game, that that clip cuts off right before Jeff Green passes it to Kyrie, who hits a three. Of course, I'll be watching.
All right, Mina is a Nets super fan, because why wouldn't you do that if you were from Seattle? Y'all ain't got no team. Golic, are you intrigued?
I am intrigued about what the Nets have turned Mina into, where somehow now the slights of this network are against that Brooklyn team and not the Bucks team with the reigning MVP that we just forgot about for this entire season.
Like they're not there. like nothing they ever did before mattered.
He signed that extension and it went poof.
Right. Dude, if he had not signed that extension, we would be on every win and loss that they had. He's staying for 5 years. Nothing interesting about that incredible player.
That's so true. But really, Kyrie did hit that three. He did cut off right before he made. I remember it. Like, and yeah.
We know.
All right, that is our show. Check out the Mina Kimes Show with Lenny. It's a podcast with a dog on it. We also have Mike Golick Jr., ESPN Radio 4-7, Chiney and Golick.
And you can get the right time with Bomani Jones, including Foxworth Fridays, wherever you get your podcast. Two different people, folks.
Yeah, I was wondering when that was going to happen.